to people using alcohol more and some of them getting into trouble as a result.
17% of Ohio adults reported excessive alcohol use in 2020, according to the CDC.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported on great radio stations, your favorite podcast platform. Find your trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KPFT Houston, Texas. This is Houston's community radio station serving our diverse communities for more than 50 years.
That is the percolating beat of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees. And that means it is 6 p.m. on a Wednesday, and it's time for So What's Your Story? We're the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to stories and storytelling, right here on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston Community Radio. Well, I'm your host today, Eric Heen, and I'm backed up by the most talented team on radio. And every week, we feature guest storytellers who come share stories, stories that'll make us laugh or cry or shiver, but stories that come straight from their heart. Now, our guest today has been on before. He was on back in June, and he was a big hit back then. So he is back by popular demand. His name is Mark Binder. Mark is an Audi Award nominee. He's the author of more than two dozen books and audiobooks. He tours the world as a performer, transmitting the joy of story across boundaries. Hey, Mark, good to have you back here on So
It's
What's
nice
Your Story?
To be back.
Yeah.
I got so many stories. I was listening to the intro. I don't know about you, but in this era, I seem to be asked to write my bio over and over and over again.
Yes.
Do you have that problem?
I definitely do, except not many people ask for my bio, Mark.
Well, you know, I'm applying for grants and this and that and the other thing. I've been having a midlife crisis for at least 20 years now.
Oh.
And every so often I go, well, what the heck am I doing? And I was just listening to the bio that you just read. I was like, yeah, that's pretty much what I do. Part of the challenge in 2022, which you're an old fart like me.
Yes.
So 2022 isn't the present, it's the future, and it isn't the way we thought it was going to be, right?
Oh yeah.
We were supposed to have the flying cars for everybody by now.
The Jetsons, yes.
Exactly. It's harder and harder to communicate with people these days. Not like more difficult to speak, but more difficult to connect with people. Everybody keeps saying, who's your audience? When I say everybody, they go, no, that's not true. And I go, no, no, really. I want to talk to adults. I want to talk to children, often at the same time. Mm-hmm. I don't have this niche, although some of, you know, some stories are for young people and some stories are for older people, but,
sure.
But it makes it very challenging. You know, I always come back to Stephen King. Stephen King, everybody knows what Stephen King is, or even better, J.K. Rowling.
Mm-hmm.
Like J.K. Rowling, you know, Harry Potter, right?
Sure.
And when she decided to write mysteries, she actually did it under a pen name, Robert Galbraith.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody bought it until she leaked that Robert Galbraith was actually J.K. Rowling. And all of a sudden, oh, we're going to buy that book. Even in, you know, sight unseen, because they trusted J.K. Rowling, but by giving it that different branding, it created a different niche.
Right.
It's so very strange.
You mentioned adult stories and children's stories. So you must differentiate somewhat between the two. I mean, I see here on your website, what does it say? You talk about stories of drugs and death. You probably don't go into that with children too much.
Not usually when they're in the room. I mean, it does. I do differentiate when I'm telling stories. Well, death does show up in stories. I mean, Jack and the Beanstalk is the story about a thief and a murderer.
Oh, yeah.
And I tell that story all the time in schools, and nobody's ever called me on that. As in performance, what I do, kind of like what I've got here with you today, I make a set list of a whole bunch of stories that I'm thinking about telling. And then I look at the audience and pay attention to what the weather is outside and what the mood is. And I adjust the set list based on all those factors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of how it works.
Yeah. You know, that's how we like it here, Mark. We don't like it too scripted. Like you're just reciting stories. It's got to come from your heart.
Absolutely. So this story is one of my favorites, and it was written. I got hired by the U.S. Department of Education to tell stories about science for librarians in elementary schools. It was basically to model how you could use storytelling to communicate science.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for grades K through 5 in a library, in a public school. And I came up with this story. It's called It Ate My Sister.
Love the title.
So you want to hear the story?
It grabbed my attention. Let's hear that story, Mark.
Okay. When I was a kid, I had an older sister. Her name was Ellen, and she was 2 years older than me. I don't know if you have an older brother or sister, but if you're an only child, this is what it's like when you have brothers and sisters. Sometimes you love each other, but most of the time you can't stand each other. Right. They take your stuff. They break your stuff. They call you names. And the thing that Ellen did that used to drive me crazy happened every single morning. Now, when you go to my house, you go up the stairs. And my room is the first door on the left. Ellen's room is further down on the left. My parents' room is on the right. And at the end of the hall is the bathroom. And my mom just put in this brand new shag carpeting. Kids, you don't know what shag carpeting is. It's sort of like grass, except made out of fiber. And it feels kind of good, but it has to be vacuumed a lot. And it's a real, anyway, every morning, didn't matter how early I was or how quiet I was, I'd get up and have to use, you know, the bathroom, right? So I'd go down the hall, and just before I'd get to the bathroom, the door to Ellen's room would pop open. She'd jump in the bathroom and she would slam the door in my face.
Huh.
I'd be like, Ellen, go away, you creep. Come on, Ellen, I was here first. No, you're not, because I'm inside and you're not. So there. And she'd be in there for like a week. You know, I don't know what it takes girls so long in the bathroom. Me, I'm in, out, and done. And I'd start banging on the door. And as soon as I'd start banging on the door, my dad would come out and be like, what's going on around here? And as soon as I heard his voice, I knew it was going to be over soon, because she'd come out of the bathroom and go, I don't know what his problem is. Good morning, Daddy. She'd give him a kiss. He would laugh and she would get away with it every single time. So I decided I was going to take revenge. My mom was into gardening and she was into organic stuff way before anybody else was. So she never used any pesticides or insecticides. And the garden was infested with slugs. Slugs, some people might not know what they are. They're basically snails without shells. The Latin name, this is where it gets educational. The Latin name for a slug is terrestrial gastropod mollusk, which means a one-footed land clam. Anyway, so the garden was infested with slugs, and my mom said I could do whatever I wanted with the slugs as long as I got them out of the garden. So I went out at night, and I collected this big jar full of slugs. I used chopsticks because after you pick up about two or three slugs with your fingers, you get all kind of slimy. Now, slugs like to come out at night because they need a lot of moisture, a lot of water. So I had this big mason jar full of slugs, and I took it inside. And first thing in the morning, I went downstairs and went into the kitchen, took one of the slugs, and I dropped it right into Ellen's juice glass. Bloop. Ooh. And then I filled her cereal bowl to the top with slugs, and I covered it up with a napkin. And I sat down to read the newspaper. Now, I love to read the newspaper for two reasons. First of all, you can learn a lot. But second of all, you can hide behind it. Now, I know that kids are really good at hiding behind cell phones these days, but a newspaper beats a cell phone for that flat out.
Oh, yes.
So I'm sitting there, I'm reading the newspaper, and Ellen comes downstairs. Good morning, Mom. She sits down. She picks up her juice glass. What? Oh, yeah, I do want to go to the mall. No, Mom, I want to get the red dress. I don't want the blue dress, Mom. I want the red. Fine. She took a big sip and she went running to the sink, spat it all out. Oh, that is so gross. She went back to the table. She picked up the napkin and she saw the slugs wriggling. She said, you are disgusting. Get away from me. Get away from me.
Oh.
So that year in school, we had a science fair. Did you ever have a science fair in your school?
Definitely. Every year.
It's actually kind of amazing how many schools don't have science fairs these days. Mm. But our school had a science fair, and it was pretty simple. You had to come up with, usually you'd come up with the experiment first, but you had to come up with a theory or a hypothesis. Right. And an experiment that was designed to prove or disprove your hypothesis, and you had to collect data and make a display. So I decided I was going to use the slugs. I was going to take each slug. I was going to measure it with a ruler. I was going to put it on a scale and weigh it. And then I was going to take a tablespoon of salt, the constant, and dump it on top of the slug and time how long it took the slug to melt down. Whoa. Now, you've done this, right?
Yes, the salt on the snails. It's part of everybody's childhood.
It is a cruel part of everyone's childhood. If you don't know what happens, it looks like it's an acidic effect, but it's actually not. What it does is if you put salt on a slug, it dries the slug's skin out and the inside comes out and it starts bubbling up and it turns into this puddle of slime. Yeah. It is really cool. Kind of gross. Really cool. Kind of gross. Anyway, the theory, because this was a science project, the theory was that the bigger the slug, the longer it would take to melt down. So I'm melting the slugs. I'm taking pictures. I'm putting the information on the paper, on the graph. We didn't have Excel back in those days. And Ellen walks in my room. She looks at me and she's like, "You are disgusting." Yeah. "Did you read the science fair manual?" Yeah. "No, you did not." "Yes, I did." "No, you did not. Did you read rule number 74? Yeah. "No, you did not. Rule 74 says no cruelty to animals."
Ooh.
"It's a slug. It's still an animal. Mom said I could do whatever I wanted to the slugs. Rule 74 says you can't in the science fair. Your project is illegal." And off she went. She just wrecked my science fair project. So I was trying to figure out what to do. Because the science fair was coming up. It was mandatory. You had to participate. And I was reading in the newspaper. I love reading the newspaper because you learn all sorts of cool stuff. And I read about this chemical called RBGH, recombinant bovine growth hormone, sometimes called RBST. You've heard of it, right?
Yeah, growth hormone, sure.
Yeah, it's a growth hormone for cows. And what it does is it makes the cows get bigger and fatter quicker, and they make more milk too. It's really cool. It works. But the problem is some of that chemical gets into the milk and kids drink it. And nobody knows what it does to kids. And I thought, well, if we don't know what it does to kids, we don't know what it does to slugs either, right? So I took a bottle cap and I filled it up with milk and I put the slug right next to it. It turns out that slugs don't like to drink milk. They need a lot of water. They have kind of a fatal attraction to beer. If you want to kill slugs, you put a saucer full of beer in your backyard and you'll have dead slugs in the morning,
right,
which tells you a little bit about beer, kids. Anyway, but they don't like to drink milk. And the science fair was coming up. It was mandatory. I didn't know what to do. And I thought, well, what would my favorite scientist do? Do you have a favorite scientist, Eric?
Probably Albert Schweitzer. I just came up with
Albert Schweitzer. That's a good one. Nobody ever says him. You get Albert Einstein, you get George Washington Carver, you get Bill Nye, the science guy, Marie Curie, Stephen Jay Hawking. Anyway, my favorite scientist has always been Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it wasn't the monster. It was the doctor. So I took a battery and a couple of wires and I attached the battery to the wires and I zapped the slug. It sucked the milk right in. It was the coolest thing. And I went to bed. And the next morning, the slug had grown from 1 inch to 2 inches. It's like, cool. Yeah. Got some more milk and another battery. I zapped the slug. It sucked the milk right in. The next morning, the slug had grown from 2 inches to
4 inches.
4 inches. Yes. It doubled in size. Awesome. I got a half a cup of milk and a bigger battery. I zapped the slug. It sucked all the milk in. I went to bed the next morning. The slug grew from 4 inches to?
Yes, to 8. We're here at 8 now.
16 inches.
16.
Exponential growth. I picked it up. It was like holding this warm, wet tube sock made out of jello. Hey, Ellen. Ellen, come into my room. Have you seen my science fair project lately? She walked into my room and I shoved it right in her face. She went, oh, and I chased around the house. Ah, get away from me. Get away from me. Anyway, that evening, after everybody went to bed, I went up to the attic. Now, we had this big cylindrical thing we used to fill with water to feed the cats when we went on vacation. So I brought it down to my bedroom, went into the kitchen, got 2 gallons of milk out of the refrigerator, filled the cylinder up with the milk, put the slug next to it, and plugged the slug right into the wall socket. Sucked that milk right in. I went to bed, and the next morning, the slug was gone. At first, I thought maybe it exploded, you know? I looked up on the ceiling, but there was nothing dripping off the ceiling. So I got out of bed and... Oh, there is this trail of slug slime leading out of my bathroom. Took a left on the shag carpet, and it was heading down, sorry, out of my bedroom, I should have said. Took a left on the shag carpet, and it was heading down the hall to the bathroom. So I'm walking down the hall to the bathroom. I'm like slipping and sliding in the slime. And the door to Ellen's room pops open. She jumps in the bathroom. She slams the door in my face. I'm like, Ellen, go away, you creep. Ellen, yeah, exactly. Ellen, is there something in there with you? What? Ellen, is there something big and slimy and ugly in there with you? You mean like your face? Come on, Ellen, have you seen my science fair project lately? No, leave me alone. And I was trying to figure out where it had gone because it was too big for the toilet. It was too big for the sink. It was in the shower. Ellen, what? Don't look in the shower. What? Ellen, whatever you do, don't look in the shower. And I stood back because I knew she was going to come tearing out of there at any moment. And I waited. And I waited. And then I heard, Ellen? Ellen, unlock the door. I thought fast. I ran back to my bedroom and I grabbed my screwdriver, ran back down the hall. I popped open the lock and there was the biggest slug you had ever seen. It had eye stalks the size of my arms. And inside was my sister, Ellen. It was digesting her.
Whoa.
I know. I thought fast. I ran down the hall, downstairs, into the kitchen, grabbed the salt shaker off the kitchen table, back up the stairs, down the hall, took off the cap to the salt shaker, and I threw the salt at the slug. And the salt hit the slug right between the eye stalks. Now, when slugs are really little, you can't hear them make any noise. In fact, they actually don't have any vocal cords. But when they get big and angry, they sound like this. And it charged. Yeah, big slugs move really slowly. I had plenty of time. You know, I ran down the hall, downstairs, outside, opened a garage door, and got the big bucket of rock salt my dad kept for the driveway. We live in New England. It snows a lot, rains a lot. He had this big bucket of rock salt. Closed the garage door because my dad would always get, anyway, never mind that. Closed the garage door, ran back inside, up the stairs, down the hall, took the bucket of rock salt, and threw the salt at the slug. The salt hit the slug, and it started to melt. And this wave of warm slug slime went oozing over my toes. And standing in the middle of the bathroom with slug slime dripping off of her fingers and slug snot coming out of her nose and slug guts coming out of her mouth was my sister, Ellen. My dad came out, I was like, what's going on around here? My mom was, oh no, my new shag carpeting. And I got in so much trouble. I was grounded for a month. The charge was assault and battery. And my mom got on the phone, called the milk company. So they changed the formula. So kids, don't try this at home. It doesn't work anymore. They changed the formula. So when I took my science fair project into school, they said that I'd cheated. They'd said that I'd gotten taken a camera and held it close to a little slug. We didn't have Photoshop in those days, right? So I got an F on my science fair project.
Oh my God.
I know. But one good thing did come out of it. In the morning, when I get up and go down the hall to the bathroom, my sister was in there. Not a problem.
Exactly.
All I had to do was knock on the door and say, hey, Ellen, have you seen my science fair project lately? And boom, she'd be out of there like a shot.
Yes.
And that is the story of how it ate my sister.
If they only knew those science project judges, if they only knew the true story, you would have won.
Exactly.
Hands down.
Now, the cool thing is, so I wrote that story, and that story is in the book called It Ate My Sister. I wrote that story a long time ago. And we just finished the audiobook for It Ate My Sister. It just came out. It's sort of dribbling out. Still waiting for Audible to have it, but it's my first audiobook that's available on Spotify.
Okay.
Which is cool. Spotify just started doing audiobooks. I don't know if you know that.
And it's called It Ate My Sister.
It Ate My Sister. Yes.
Do you do your own do your own recordings on Audible books?
I do. I'm right now I'm talking to you from my basement studio. Yes, which we call the Musty Smell Studios.
Well, we are going to take a break from our stories right now for station identification and to make a few announcements. This is Eric Heen, and you're listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM radio in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Huntsville. And this is what is happening in the story world in the Houston area, even as we speak. First of all, our sponsor is the Houston Storytellers Guild.
The Guild holds virtual story swaps the fourth Tuesday of every month, and everybody's is welcome to tune into those. For more on how about to participate in these story swaps, go to HoustonStorytellers.org and find out all about the Storytellers Guild. And while you're on that very same website, you can go to our page for this radio show, So What's Your Story? There you can find out more about us, and you can see our story archives dating way back to 2008. And we're also on Facebook. So you can just go to So What's Your Story on Facebook. You can see our weekly updates and all kinds of good stuff. And don't forget to like us before you leave. And our friends at the Moss Storytelling Organization, they meet the second Tuesday of every month down at the Warehouse Live on Emmanuel Street. So their next Story Slam will be October 11th. And the theme next month will be Grown, G-R-O-W-N, like all grown up, not groaning at a joke or something. The theme will be Grown, and everybody is invited to the Moth to maybe even tell your story about being all grown up. Okay, we're going to get back to our storyteller today. His name is Mark Binder. He's been on before. As soon as you hear him, you'll know why. Mark, let's get on to your next story here.
This story, so changing gears, using the pen name of Izzy Abramson,
right.
I have this series of books that I call the Village Life series. It's set in the village of Chelm, which is a fictional Jewish village of fools. There's actually Sacha Baron Cohen is bringing out something on HBO sometime in the not too distant future about Chelm. So I'm going to say this right now, mine's better. And it's been published a couple of times, and we finally released the definitive, unabridged author's cut of The Village Twins. And this story is from that.
Let's hear it.
On the edge of the Black Forest, somewhere between Russia and Poland, and occasionally Germany, there's a small Jewish village called Chelm. 80 or so houses, more chickens than people, the village is a community of laughter and love, arguments, complaints, reconciliations, more complaints. Problems, are there problems? Of course there are problems. As wise Rabbi Kibitz often says, what would life be like without problems? Well, it might be nice. Rabbi Kibitz was sitting in his office when Jacob Shlemiel, the carpenter, came in. He looked exhausted. The man's bags under his eyes had bags under his eyes. His boys, the twins, had just been born a few days before. Jacob stumbled. He sat down in the chair. He looked at the rabbi and he said, Rabbi, I need your help. What can I do for you? I need you to do something for the bris. The bris is the circumcision ceremony that binds the child to the covenant of God. I'll be happy to do whatever you like. Well, Rabbi, I need you to perform the circumcision differently. Differently? What do you mean differently? Well, they're twins. They're identical. We can't tell them apart. One of them, I knew who they were when they were first born, but when I woke up in the morning, I couldn't tell which one was which. So what are you going to do? Make them drop their pants to tell which one they are? I don't know, Rabbi. I want to call the first one Abraham and the second one Adam. Why not call the first one Adam since he was the first? I don't care, Rabbi. I'll call one of them one and one of them number two. I just want to know which one is which. Well, you know, Jacob, circumcision is a very delicate process. When they're that little, there's really not a lot to work with. As a moil, as someone who's trained to perform a circumcision, my teacher always told me to be consistent, to try to do exactly the same thing, exactly the same way. Rabbi, I don't know what we're going to do. All right, I've got an idea. Let's put an ad in the Jewish newspaper, and I'll advertise for another moil. When he comes, I'll perform the circumcision on one, and he'll perform the circumcision on the other, and it'll be a little different, like an artist's signature. Rabbi, you are a great and wise man. Jacob Shlemiel stumbled out, and the rabbi felt kind of content, like Solomon with his baby, but of course he only had one to deal with. Well, the ad went into the Jewish newspaper, and it was spread throughout the land. The evening of the bris. Now, normally they perform brises during the day, but because, and this is a footnote in the book, it's an important footnote in the book, between the birth of the first twin at sunset and the second twin at sunrise, the village of Chelma had actually changed boundaries, like the world had been redrawn around it, and it was traded from Poland to Russia for a box of Cuban cigars and two bags of gold. So the rabbi decided that rather than holding the bris during the day, he would hold it at night, at midnight, so that both twins would be born on different days, although in the Jewish calendar, they're sort of born at the same time. Anyway, he waited and outside the house of the Shlemiels. That's where they were holding it. And no rabbi showed up. So he went inside, and Jacob was there, and Rebecca was there, and their whole family was there. And he took one of the children, and he performed the circumcision, and the boy began to cry, and they named that child Abraham. And he looked over at Jacob and he said, Jacob, you know, it's actually your duty to perform the circumcision. What you've done is you've delegated it to me. If you would like to perform the circumcision yourself, I can show you exactly. Jacob's eyes rolled back in his head and he fell over. Pump. When he was revived, Rabbi Kibitz again picked up a child, took his small instruments, he cut, and oops. A furor went through the room. Oops, what do you mean, oops? Relax. It's not a problem. I tried to perform the circumcision differently, but I couldn't. They're exactly the same. And in all the confusion, the boys got mixed up again, and it wasn't for many, many years that anyone knew for sure which one was which.
Wow. Now, is that true, Mark? That see, I'm as goyish as you can get. I'm from a farm town in the Midwest. So these stories are educational to me as far as Jewish culture. Is that true that the father is supposed to do the circumcision?
Yes. I learned that at the circumcision of my eldest offspring, that was supposed to be my job, and that what I was doing was delegating. I was like hiring somebody to refinish your kitchen, except on a really small scale. The whole circumcision thing was a real interesting thing when you have a child and this guy shows up. And we actually hired the comic Moyle. The Moyle is the name of the technician. It could be a rabbi. It doesn't have to be a rabbi. Mm-hmm. But this guy had a shtick. Mm-hmm. He had a whole bunch of like jokes that he was making the whole time.
Circumcision jokes.
Exactly. Oh. You know, what do they say? You know, how do you pay a rabbi for circumcision? I don't know. They only take tips. But
So some Jewish puns there. I remember reading the village feasts, and there's some overlap in these characters. I recognized
all of the books have characters that overlap, and they are kind of fractal. You can read them in any order. If you're just starting out, I would suggest, I don't know what order. The Village Twins, or Winter Blessings, mm-hmm. or A Village Romance, which tells the romantic relationship between Rabbi Kibitz and the caterer, Mrs. Highpool.
Yeah, but these aren't really chronological, are they?
No, they all happen simultaneously.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I
want to interject here, Mark,
because sure.
You're mentioning all these books. Now you have your two writers, your Izzy Abramson and your Mark Binder. Differentiate here.
My Hebrew name is Isaac. So mm-hmm. that got shortened to Izzy. And my father's Hebrew name is Abraham, which got, so it's Abramson, Izzy Abramson.
Ah, okay.
Is where that came from.
Because I'm kind of picturing here, Mark Binder books are more of a modern, and these Izzy Abramson books seem to be more like traditional tales.
Right. Except, of course, then I've got my bedtime storybook collection, and then as Mark Binder, and then my epic poem, Loki Ragnarok. If you're a fan of Norse mythology, and I'm a big fan of Norse mythology, you know that the Marvel movies are not Norse mythology, you know, they're comic book stuff. And what I did was I took the Norse myth of Ragnarok, the end of the world, and I retold it from Loki's point of view. Loki is the trickster, and he's usually portrayed in the Norse myths and in most popular interpretations as the devil or, you know, the evil guy.
Sure.
And what I did was I rewrote it totally from his point of view. So you understand why he did what he did.
Hmm.
And it's a blend of comedy and tragedy and horror.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been really great talking to you, and I do want to ask people who are listening to sign up for my newsletter at markbinderbooks.com. But even better than that, go out and get a book or an audio book. I promise you, you'll really enjoy this stuff. The Village Twins by Izzy Abramson, It Ate My Sister by Mark Binder, Loki Ragnarok by Mark Binder. They're available as printed books, ebooks, and audiobooks pretty much everywhere.
Okay, I got the plug. Do you hear me?
I do hear you.
Oh, boy. See, I'm on an ancient desktop computer. My laptop got suddenly whacked out. It's in the shop. But, okay, we're back in business here. Okay.
Yeah.
So now, where were we?
Yeah. Well, I was talking about Storyfest.
Mm-hmm.
In Rhode Island, we used to have a storytelling festival called the Johnny Cake Festival. Johnny Cake is a cornmeal pancake, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Cornmeal mush pancake that's kind of original to this part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that festival vanished almost 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Rhode Island Black Storytellers has a storytelling festival called Ribs, but I wanted a storytelling festival that was inclusive for everyone. And what I really wanted to do with Storyfest is build the audience for this work live again.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are listening on the radio, and it's a lot of fun to listen on the radio, but storytelling in person, for example, It Ate My Sister, you didn't get to see any of the physicality that happens with that story. There's a lot of physicality that happens inside that story that you can only imagine.
A giant slug, yes, definitely.
Yes, but what's cool about storytelling that I didn't know until I became a storyteller is that when storytelling is happening, at least the way that I do it, I like to think that I vanish, the audience vanishes, and that all that is happening is the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're in this different space, and we're all in it together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I really do think that my work is multi-generational and for all audiences, because the kids and the adults, they're hearing the stories and interpreting it differently, but they're sharing the experience.
Mm-hmm.
When I was at the conservatory, there were these two phenomenal actors who are in the Trinity Rep company. Trinity Rep is the theater, what's the alley? Is the alley the one in Houston? Well, anyway, Adrian Hall actually came from Texas to Providence, where he was the director of the Trinity Theater. And there were these two actors there, Dan Von Bargen and Ed Shea. Dan Von Bargen, you might have seen him perform. He did a lot of movies where he was like the general. He had this thing where he, but every character that he played, he was Dan Von Bargen as that character. And Ed Shea would transform himself into something different with every character. And I loved the sort of the distinction of those two actors. And I think as a storyteller, I don't know if I do either of them. I sort of try to minimize the ooh, he's doing something cool part of the thing and just have it be the story. Well, let me close out with one story. Last time I told you this story about Og, first story. So as a storyteller, I often wonder, you know, where do things come from? You know, what was the first story? And then I was thinking, well, who was the first scientist? This is another story from that set that I got hired for. Who was the very first scientist? Og, caveman. Og live in cave, huh? With dog, woof, and wife, Marcia. Hi, I'm Marcia. One day, Og doing scientific experiment. Og take rock. Og hold rock up. Og let rock go. Rock fall. Og pick rock up. Og hold rock up. Og let rock go. Rock fall. Marcia, come here.
What is it, Og?
Look, scientific experiment. Og lift rock up. Og hold rock. Og let rock go. Rock fall. Every time, huh?
Wow, that's really boring, Rob. Really, really, really boring, Og.
No, it's not boring. It's scientific experiment. Rock, fall. Rock, fall. Rock, fall. Every time.
Og, why do you call it a scientific experiment?
Well, Og takes spear. Og try move big boulder. Spear break boulder in parts and spear break. Experiment to move rock. Experiment.
Okay, Aga. Why don't you call me when you get something different?
Okay, something different. Og pick up rock. Og hold rock. Og hold rock. Og hold rock. Rock fall. Rock heavy. Og try stick rock on tree. Og put rock on tree. Rock fall. Og take rock. Og put rock on big rock. Og rock fall. Ow. Oh, okay. Og take rock. Og throw rock up. Og throw rock up. Ow. Ooh, ow. Ooh. Wait. What else not fall down, huh? What else not fall down? Birds. Birds not fall down. Og take rock. Og throw rock. Og going throw rock like bird. Og take rock. Og throw rock. One. Two. Six. Whoa! Rock go up. Not fall down, huh? Pretty cool. Og, great scientist. Here come Erg. Erg live in next cave over. Hello, Og. Hello, Erg. How you doing? Not so good, Og. What's the matter? Well, Erg standing outside cave, and all of a sudden, rock come flying out of sky like bird. Ooh. Fall to ground. Hit Erg pet rat Itty. Land on pet rat Itty. Kill pet rat Itty. Ooh. Itty was was Fat Rat. Now it's the Flat Rat. Oh, maybe you make it into a rat mat, huh? Not funny, Og. Oh, Erg. Og sad. Og sorry. Og going to name new law after dead rat Itty. Law? What is law? New scientific law. Name after dead rat Itty. What you do with Itty? Oh, have to bury Itty in grave. Okay. Itty in grave. Okay. Now, law of gravity. Eh? What goes up must come down. Law of gravity. Thanks, Og. Bye, Erg. Hey, Marcia. Og invent law of gravity. The end.
Okay, great. That's where gravity came, or the law of that, gravity came from.
That is where gravity. Now, that story is very different when you see it in person. There's a lot of physical stuff that's going on and a lot of audience interactions. It's a challenging story to do straight without any of that.
Oh, sure. I remember you told an Og and Marcia story last time. Well, do you have a book on an Og and Marcia book?
Not yet. I did put, the only book that I don't like of mine is a book called Every Hero Has a Story. And I tried to put a lot of my different stories in it. And the Og story just doesn't read in print. Mm. You read that and it's like, it would make a good comic book, but not just text.
Probably because you have to speak so prehistorical.
Well, exactly.
Okay, Mark, now, we don't have a whole lot more time here, but do you have any more stories you could fit in? Give us like an encore story.
How long an encore story? I actually need to ask you that.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's go five.
5 minutes. All right, cool. Okay. I always like to say, well, let me tell you a story. Mm-hmm. You're out for a walk and it's a beautiful day. And all of a sudden, the sky starts to cloud over and it gets darker and darker and darker. And it starts to rain. Rain comes bucketing down and you're getting drenched and it's cold. So you start to run and you run and you run and you run and you bang through a door and you're in a store and you're dripping wet on the floor. And you look around and you realize you're in a candy store. You've never been in this candy store before. It's the coolest place you've ever seen. There is candy everywhere. There are shelves of candy. There are boxes of candy. There's walls of candy. There's candy hanging from the ceiling. The guy behind the counter takes your name, calls home, and says, listen, they're coming to get you, but while you wait, why don't you take a piece of candy? Piece of candy? Yeah. Piece of candy. Anything I want? Yeah. Anything you want, but just one, okay? Anything I want? Yeah, but just one. Anything? Yeah. Anything. So you look around, and there is a corner full of lollipops. Lollipops, all different flavors. There's red, there's blue, there's yellow, there's green, there's orange, there's purple. There are these round lollipops that look like golf balls. There are those big swirly kind, the ginormous ones that are the size of pie plates. Okay, lollipops. They'll keep. What else? And you look a little bit over and there is a whole wall of jelly beans. All different flavor jelly beans. There's blueberry, there's raspberry, there's strawberry, there's popcorn, there's pecan, there's booger flavored jelly beans. Anything I want. Yeah, but just one. Well, one jelly bean. No, not going to cut it. So you keep going. And there's this counter, this glass counter, beautiful glass counter. And above it, it says T-R-U-F-F-L-E-S, truffles. Truffles. What's a truffle? Oh, truffles are awesome. They're enrobed in chocolate. And you look, and these are beautiful chocolates. There's Grand Marnier and Pina Colada, Tia Maria. Well, too fancy. So you go a little further and look behind the counter, and there are all of these things covered with chocolate. There are chocolate-covered cherries and chocolate-covered strawberries, chocolate-covered pineapple, chocolate-covered potato chips, chocolate-covered Oreos, chocolate-covered pretzels, anything I want. Yeah, but just one. So you look at the candy bars. They have every single candy bar ever made. There's Twizzlers and Twix, there's Pixie Sticks, there's Reese's, there's Three Musketeers, there's Mars Bars, there's Mounds, there's Almond Joys, there's Lion Bars. And at the very end of the row, there is this box. It's almost empty. There's only one candy bar in the box. It's kind of big. It's got an orange wrapper. You pick it up, you look at it, M-A-R-A-T-H-O-N, Marathon Bar. What's a Marathon Bar? Oh, Marathon Bars are good. They don't make them anymore. That's the last one. The last one? Can I have it, please? Sure, you can have it. So you pick up the Marathon Bar and you tear open the orange wrapper, and it's weird looking. It's sort of braided. It's covered with chocolate, and it looks sort of like a hair braid with open space between it. You bite into it, and it's really, really chewy. It's caramel covered with chocolate. And you can't eat a Marathon Bar fast. It takes a long, long time to eat a Marathon Bar. And by the time you're done, they're there to pick you up. Thanks, mister. You're welcome. And they take you home. And people say, why do you tell stories? And I say, because they don't make Marathon Bars anymore. But all of you just got to taste a little bit of one.
Ah, yes. I love it, Mark. That's a very good metaphor with the candy. Everything's instant gratification. Pop it into your mouth. But we need the Marathon Bars.
You don't remember the Marathon Bar, do you?
I do. I think I've lost a few teeth from
Marathon. Exactly. Bar. Yeah. Yeah. No, I, if I'm successful with this story, eventually they'll bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
So lobby for that Marathon Bar.
Oh, Mark, I could listen to you all day. You got some great stories, but we're getting a little short on time here. And before we let you go, I want to mention your website. It's markbindersbooks.com.
No, it's markbinderbooks.com, M-A-R-K-B-I-N-D-E-R, books.com. And you can find my books, my audiobooks, It Ate My Sister. Mm-hmm. You'll find links to the Village Twins and Storyfest and mm-hmm. all sorts. I bring out a lot. I keep busy.
Yeah. Yeah. I've read some of these. I highly recommend them. Very entertaining. And also, I might say, educational. I'm learning a lot about Jewish culture. So, Mark, do you have any parting words for us here in Houston? Anything you can leave us with, some words of wisdom?
Yeah. Don't sneeze into your coffee.
Great advice. Great advice. It's a little too late for me, but great. Okay, Mark, it's been great. Been a pleasure. You take care.
Thanks so much.
Well, that is our show for today, folks. I'd like to thank our very special guest, Mark Binder, for all those great stories. And this could very well be our last recorded show, because after 2.5 long years, we are going back to live programming very soon. KPFT has a brand new studio on Caroline Street. New building, brand new equipment, and we'll be in there any day. So we're all hyped up about that. This is Eric Keene with So What's Your Story? And as long as you keep loving great stories, we'll keep bringing them to you. And with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we want you to always remember that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Thank you.
relevant talk, information, and great music. This is Community Media, KPFT.